I know you may not have been around in 1969, but this country came closer to a revolution in 1969 than at any other time since the Civil War. And looky here. There's another kind of a revolution going on. It's a revolution of technology. It's a revolution of knowledge. It's a revolution of societal philosophy. And the lines are being drawn and the debate is underway and it's hot. It's real hot. Our guest for the remainder of this hour, and it's early in the hour, is Richard C. Hoagland. He went down to Chichen Itza, ran into some opposition to even taking any measurements. But he took them anyway, and we're going to find out about that when we come back with him in just a minute. Please stop by coasttocoastam.com and check out some of the stuff that's in the news. So this is a good one. The anti-drone hoodie, which can make its wearer invisible to spies in the sky. It's true. It blocks out the thermal imaging ability of the drones that are, several states are beginning to protest those. I predict that they will not be as widespread as we think without more federal oppression, and we'll just keep pushing back because that's what you do. Fermi telescope may change to dark matter hunting. Thousands of dead fish have washed ashore in South Carolina. And there's a video up there too. Discovery of the spider that builds spider decoys. Very interesting, I think. I think you will find it, entertaining, meaning to hold within. And a big thanks to everybody who became Coast Insiders. 3 years of archive shows. Listen to them whenever you want to. And if there's one you don't like, well, don't listen to it. Go on to the next one. It's fine. It's your call. It's inexpensive, and it's a nice little service. I am sure you will like it. We'll be right back with Richard C. Hoagland right after this. This is Coast to Coast AM. You know how it is with me, Richard Hoagland. I'm all over the place here, but I'll tell you what. I have to go back and revisit before you talk about these readings. Now, maybe you know what you know. You don't really care what anybody thinks about this, but there's something stuck in my mind like a L. Ron Hubbard engram. And that's that these on 9/11, these buildings came down to due to torsion field, physical, external force applied to them. Mm-hmm. Is that your story and you're sticking with it? Because I saw those planes fly in there. They're supposed to be powdered thermite, all of nano thermite and this and that. And I mean, the information is just so liquid, you know.
John.
Hit me.
The planes were real. The planes hit the building. The planes did not bring the building down.
Okay.
You have to separate two separate events. The planes were the excuse to cover the real physics. Remember, this is the physics that is not supposed to be known or addressed or acknowledged by the mainstream scientific community. If you're sending a message to the high levels of the U.S. government, a threat of unimaginable proportions,
yes,
do it in a way that nobody outside that very small circle understands the real message. But it's unmistakable to them. And what has happened in the wake of 9/11? We have, you said it in your opening with your first guest, we have lost rights left and right. We haven't seen this savaging of the Constitution since Lincoln.
Since it's true.
The war between the states, since the huge, you know, cataclysm that sundered and almost broke this fledgling nation, brother against brother, you know, million plus dead on both sides.
Yes.
We haven't seen this level of savaging the founding fathers' creation since the 1800s. What I have been asking for the last 10 years, since 2001, which was supposed to be so incredible, a la my friend Arthur Clarke and Stanley
yes.
Kubrick,
yeah.
and that film and those projections, and look what it turned into. Look at the pile of ashes we've been left with. Essentially endless war, Orwell, up to your ears and as far as the eye can see. Think about the huge hidden dynamic behind the scenes that can cause a global warping of history on this scale.
Yes.
And you're telling me that a handful of guys wearing turbans with C4 are able to do that to the assemblage of the greatest nations this planet has ever seen? No,
no.
Something so much bigger that they're keeping secret, and those buildings came down, and again, I go back to what you can trust, which is the physics. Read Dr. Wood's book. Read the mountain of evidence of material science and actual forensic reconstruction of what happened to the metals and the concrete and the glass and the heatless fires and the embers that smoked for weeks and weeks and weeks with no real heat, and the fact that certain materials were completely disintegrated. And I will tell you tonight, without fear or contradiction, if somebody wants to debate me one-on-one on this, the materials that vanished first were the torsion-active materials, the materials that amplify and send beams of torsion field physics into matter and wind up deconstructing it at the etheric level. We're talking the most extraordinary sci-fi kind of science, which is not science fiction, it's fact, and it's been suppressed since at least World War II, if not before. And it's an entire area of scientific history which no one wants to talk about, because if they do, if that door cracks open, what everybody has been worried about, nuclear weapons, become a Sunday school picnic, a walk in the park compared to the real threats we face. Because this physics, if it's in the hands of the wrong small group of people, can literally destroy a planet. Literally. Or it can save it.
You know, I do 99% of all my communication with my fellow humans, or whatever we might actually be, by listening to them through a speaker. And I'll tell you, I'm listening to you, and I'm convinced that you are convinced. And it inclines me to be convinced while keeping an open mind. But it's never what it appears, is it?
What we need to do, John, some night, obviously when you have the time, is do a show on 9/11 and take Dr. Wood's data, maybe even get her on the show, get Joseph Farrell on the show, get some of the people that I was at this seminar in Amsterdam a couple of years ago on the show, and discuss the actual evidence of an extraordinary science masquerading with all the cover stories like nanothermite. And, you know, there's even a guy in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, who claims it was small tactical nukes. Every conceivable, you know, mistrail, you know, mm-hmm. deliberately put out piece of misinformation. Give you an example. Have you ever looked into the properties of the dust that was left, the cancers that were caused by that dust?
Only heard about them.
The fact that that dust is sitting in certain archives and you can't get near it anymore?
Didn't know that.
Do scientific studies on the dust? Why not? Because the dust is the last. What did they do with all the debris? This was a crime scene of global biblical proportions, right? What do? They sliced up all that steel and they shipped it to China as fast as their little trucks and their, you know, freighters could carry it. Did they not?
Yeah, they did.
They were hiding the evidence of a physics we're not supposed to know about.
Okay.
So with all this as backstory, I'm facing the night before we get to Chichen Itza a serious problem, both practical and theoretical and philosophical. I've got 50 people who paid to come and help me do this, and I'm being told by the authorities, you know, back to the ship, back to the staff of the ship, who were incredibly gracious in making phone calls and trying to convince them. I mean, what could one guy with a laptop and a couple of gadgets be a threat to? We were told that the reason they weren't allowing any gear in, they were going to forbid backpacks and water bottles and everything that tourists normally go to a tourist site, you know, bringing with them, is because it was 2012, it was the eve of 2012, December 21, and they were expecting huge crowds, and they were seriously concerned about, here's the bugaboo, terrorists. So I, with my little laptop, posed a major threat to the federal state of Mexico if I entered this complex with my laptop. So we had a council of war. And the organizers and I and Robin and, you know, some other folks all kind of huddled together after dinner on the promenade deck of this ship, plowing through the night, heading for dawn for where we're supposed to disembark to do these measurements. And we created a kind of a list of things we could do. What were our options? Well, one of the options was a friend of the coast, a very well-known friend, named Jaime Musson. Have you ever had Jaime on your show?
I have not.
But you know the name?
I do.
He's a very well-known Mexican broadcaster. He's been called the Mexican equivalent of Walter Cronkite. You know, well, harking back to that, you know, famous president, vice presidential debate, you know, I knew Walter Cronkite. And Jaime is, in his own way, as good as Walter Cronkite. He's a lot younger, but he's expanded his horizons after an extraordinary incident in Mexico City in July of 1991, when he saw a bevy of ships hovering around the eclipsed moon over Mexico City. And as a broadcaster, he asked people to send in their home videos, and they inundated him with videos shot from all over Mexico of things in the sky that were not aircraft, were not helicopters, were not balloons. And from that day on, he became intrigued and entranced with both the whole UFO phenomenon, as well as its ancient roots in Mayan heritage and culture, and what his great-great-great ancestors may have known and encoded in these sacred structures. So Jaime and I have known each other for years as colleagues. In fact, the very first time we saw each other was when I landed to go to a conference in L.A., and I guess Jaime had flown up from Mexico City, and he looks across this crowded airport. We've never seen each other before. We've never talked to each other. He looks at me. He gets this big grin on his face. He waves his arms wide, and he says, 19.5, which, of course, is the mathematical underpinnings of the whole hyperdimensional torsion field model. So the fact that he knew enough at that point to realize that was important to me was incredibly gratifying. So that was like 20 years ago. We've done a whole bunch of stuff together. In 2009, Robin and I and he spent a lot of quality time together in Mexico City, where he was helping me and NBC, you know, get me access to the pyramids of Teotihuacan, that complex up north of Mexico City, where I was able to measure some extraordinary attributes of this physics. Again, real empirical science, not theory, not projection, not fantasy, actual real-world data. And Jaime is watching these readings on the computer screen, and he is blown away. Now, what we decided to do on the cruise the night before we couldn't get into Chichen Itza was to call Jaime. Because I felt, given the fact that the archaeological authorities value his position and his command of a large audience in Mexico and his rigor in approaching stories. I mean, that's why he was able to get us into Teotihuacan when NBC from New York was not. It was because of Jaime Musson that I was to get these critical dawn readings on the top of the Pyramid of the Sun in April of 2009. So we called him. Robin called him, and we had a long conversation. And he basically said that there was probably nothing he could do legally and formally and even with his influence. So what he recommended is that we ditch the group and try to sneak in as ordinary tourists and get the laptop and equipment, which he had worked with because he knew how small it is, and conceal it in a bag, just a nondescript bag, not a briefcase, not anything that would call attention, but just, you know, just play tourist to the max. Wear grungy clothes, have lots of water bottles and tourist pamphlets, and just try to get in to get the readings, because he felt no approaching through the front door would be able to change things, because he said, since the new president was elected, the president of Mexico, which turned out to have been, they had an election 20 days before, like on December the 1st or November, you know, 31 or whatever.
Right.
He said a lot of things have changed and have suddenly been really tightened up, and no one seems to know why. That's why he felt he couldn't have any influence.
Makes sense.
So the next morning, we get up at the crack of dawn, and you have to meet in a certain place on the ship, and then you all go up to your buses, and then you get on, and you drive and you drive and you drive. You know, Mexico is very interesting, even at that time of the morning, once I'm not really awake.
Right.
And then you get to the site. And before we got to the site, I gave a little speech to our folks, and I explained to them what had happened and how this was a major crisis that I've been preparing to do these measurements for like 8 years, and that what I needed them to do instead of hanging out with us. I mean, how can you be invisible if you've got 50 people tagging around with you?
Impossible.
I needed them to be a diversion while Robin and I sneaked in, if we could, as tourists.
Oh, this is good.
These measurements.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
Excellent.
And what I did was, because I learned this in England when I was measuring a certain interesting site that I cannot tell you what it is or where it is, because if I do, the bad guys will probably swoop in and try to take what we think is there. But a half a mile away, John, I got readings that completely blew the meters and the algorithm.
Really?
Half a mile away. So what I've been doing ever since, this was in the summer of 2011, I guess.
Yeah.
I've been creeping up on these sites. So fortunately, the Mayan tour, you know, you rent these tour buses and they have kind of their canned thing they do. What they do, because of the economics and the fact that an awful lot of private entrepreneurs are dependent on tourists, they stop a couple of times before you get to the site. They pull into a parking lot, and there just happened to be a whole bunch of shops where they disembark you, and you spend 20 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes buying stuff before you get back on the bus to go to the site itself.
Right.
So I was able to do measurements approaching Chichen Itza without the haze of the political fog of, we're not going to let you in to actually measure the site. And I got extraordinary readings as far as 5 miles away.
And what do these readings tell you? I mean, can you relate it to us practically?
Well, this is radio, not television, so I can't show you a picture.
I know.
You're going to all have to create word pictures.
Okay.
What I've done, as I said in the last hour, was I have digitized Bruce De Palma's Accutron measurement system. What Bruce did in a series of lab experiments having to do with high-speed rotation of mass, concrete, steel, aluminum, he would just spin flywheels, he figured out that there were unusual forces that were not Newtonian, you know, meaning, you know, F equals MA and action equals reaction and all that, operating when you have large masses spinning at high speed. Stunning pioneer breakthrough in mechanics that you have never read about in any mainstream textbook, right?
Right, never.
Same reason. It's part of the physics we're not supposed to know, because somebody will build weapons out of it and destroy the planet. At least that's
well, I don't recall any chapters dealing with Tesla's work, unless it was an obscure volume.
Oh, yeah, well, Tesla's kind of come back, but for a huge interregnum, it was like he never even existed.
Mm-hmm.
He was deliberately expunged from history texts, from radio, you know, broadcasts and histories of the development of, you know, radio and all that. He was a non-person, made into a non-person because his science, his physics, is basically the same stuff we're talking about tonight. Anyway, so they stopped several places before they get to the site. So it allowed me to do the creep up on the place measurements to get baselines. And we got amazing results, again, that I had planned when we got back from the cruise to present at a major conference held in a couple, 3 weeks on the weekend of February 8th in Los Angeles called the Conscious Life Expo. Well, as I said to George the other night, I'd planned to be there and to lay out what we found.
Yeah.
I may not be there and may not be laying out we found, because my invitation to present this data at that conference after the cruise was suddenly withdrawn.
Your what was withdrawn?
My invitation to present the data we discovered at Chichen Itza and going to and from
was withdrawn.
Was suddenly withdrawn with the most cockamamie stupid excuse you can imagine.
The All right.
Is, I missed the deadline for the program book.
Oh, man.
Now, this is a diversion. This is a digression.
I know it is. Can you pick up right here when we come back? We've got to take our hard break right now.
We'll do.
And then let's get to HARP, all right?
It's coming.
So I'm going to be quiet, and you talk when we come back with Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM. Talking with Richard C. Hoagland tonight. Now, the next thing we're going to find out is he took measurements as he approached those unbelievable structures at Chichen Itza. Let's find out if he actually got into them. I want to hear some more about his stealth operation down there and go into a couple other things, too, as this hour just rapidly blows by. Let's do our little floating break quickly so we can have a nice long chat with Richard when we come back. Thank you very much for being here tonight. This is, you know what it is, it's Coast to Coast AM. Richard Hoagland, it's such a pleasure to talk with you. I would just suggest that you just go like hell to the top of the hour, man, because our time's getting away from us. So they reneged on your slot to be able to release the information. You took measurements outside of Chichen Itza as you approached it. So then what happened?
Well, we got some pretty astonishing readings, all of which I was going to lay out in L.A. in a couple of weeks. And the organizer of this conference, who is the same guy who organized the cruise conference, his name is Robert Quicksilver.
Yes.
He suddenly has uninvited me to present the data with the flimsiest of excuse. I mean, we live in the electronic age. You put things on websites, you send out Twitter notices, I have 50,000 people on Facebook between my fans and friends page. I've got millions of folks listening to me tonight or when I do stuff with George. The idea that he couldn't fill a hall and charge a nominal fair price and make a huge amount of money for his conference and get the data out and make it up to all those people who paid to go to Chichen Itza to watch me make measurements and were unable to because I was arrested, he kind of owes it to those folks and owes it to everybody listening.
So kind of sounds like somebody leaned on him, Richard.
Well, I think somebody did. Now, the way we're going to find this out is if enough people simply send him an email and tell him it would be a really good idea to have me come and do a special presentation for a couple of hours. I mean, it's a three-day conference, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's got to be a slot and a room there somewhere because usually they add people and subtract people, and it's very fluid. So what I want people to do, so if they want to see and hear this stuff, is to write to Robert Quicksilver at office, OFFICE, at ConsciousLifeExpo, all one word, .com. That's Robert Quicksilver at office at ConsciousLifeExpo.com. Office at ConsciousLifeExpo.com, all one word. Right. And if enough people tell him, you really need to kind of get your act together and get this out there and make it up to the people who paid quite a bit of money to see something they didn't get to see, because Robin and I left our folks on the bus in the parking lot after I did one last set of readings to get more baseline. We walked in being videoed by one of our guys named Ted St. Rain, who has been videoing these things for ages and ages and ages and makes them all available through his archive and his website. So Ted is videoing. We go up to, and here's the moment of truth. I've got the laptop and the equipment in a canvas bag. I've got water bottles. I've got paraphernalia of, pamphlets and tourist stuff and, sunscreen and all that. We're wearing, sun hats. We're wearing, just normal touristy stuff. Blue jeans, sandals. We're trying to look just like two people out on vacation going to Chichen Itza. We get up to the turnstile. The guard, the guy taking the tickets, looks down, sees the laptop in the canvas bag, looks at me and says, "Laptop?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Okay." And waves us on through.
Okay.
I mean, it was a mob scene. Our people had separated. They'd gone on ahead, and there was another group, being led by this Mayan elder ombudsman, and he had all these folks all dressed in white. So it was easy to spot them in this field in front of this huge pyramid, which stands, 400 or 500 feet high. I don't know how high the thing is. It's very tall and very steep and very impressive. So I'm thinking, we did it. We made it. And I make a beeline for the other side of the complex over where there's some shade and some trees. So I can take out the equipment and begin to assemble, because I got to plug a couple things in the laptop and turn on the program and start taking measurements. No sooner do I take out the laptop and begin to assemble it, than suddenly a security guard shows up with a walkie-talkie and a uniform and says, "Stop!" And we spent the next several hours, an hour and a half, in a delaying action, trying to allow me, while we're talking and Robin is talking and, you know, Ted is filming. We got all this on video. Ultimately, he says, after he walkie-talkies back and forth between the administrative building, which is, you know, a half a mile away across the complex, right?
Yeah.
"You must go to the administration building." I said, "Why can't the guy come here?" "Oh, no, you must go." And this is all in kind of, you know, he actually spoke fairly good English. But it was one of those situations where, you remember the young Marine who got permission from the State Department to take a shotgun into Mexico a few months ago?
Oh, yeah.
And because it was a half inch shorter than it was supposed to be, he wound up in a Mexican prison.
Mexican country club prison for cartel boys.
Run by the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got out, and Anderson Cooper's been all over the story, and it's an incredibly horrific story what happens if you wind up in a Mexican prison. I have visions, if I delay too much and I refuse to leave, that I'm in a foreign country. Even our ship is not under U.S. registry. You know, the Carnival is under Panama or someplace like that.
Yeah.
So you're in a very strange place where, as a tourist, they basically put you under house arrest for opening a laptop about 500 feet from the base of the pyramid, sitting on a bench under a tree. I mean, this was nuts.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
This guy who had been told, look for someone with laptop and stop them. Because the folks at the turnstile, when they have the opportunity, if this was a kind of a site policy, they would have kept us from going in, right? He specifically said, "Laptop?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Okay." Like, no big deal. So this guy now, under the trees, is walkie-talking back and forth to headquarters, and basically ultimately says, "You have to go," and points. And you'll see on the video him pointing across past the pyramid to the administration building, which has this huge radio antenna, which is how he told us, you know, where we had to go. So we're trying to delay this out. Robin is arguing. She knows some Spanish. She's basically trying to drag things out so I get more measuring time, because I'm measuring. I'm getting readings. As he's talking, I'm getting readings.
Excellent.
Finally, it was where I knew that if we pushed it one more data point, it would get to the next level, which I did not want to get to the next level, because I did not know what the next level with this Marine's experience in my consciousness could lead to. And Mexican prisons do not have a friendly PR aspect to them, right?
You don't get a phone call usually.
Exactly.
Not for a while.
Anyway, so we start walking very slowly toward the administration building, and I'm saying to Ted and I'm saying to Robin, "Is he following? Is he looking? Is he following?" Because my plan is we get to the corner of the pyramid, we make a left-hand turn, we get out of his line of sight, and I just keep measuring.
Yes.
Not to be.
Uh-huh.
At the corner of the pyramid, there is a second guard with walkie-talkie who picks us up and demands that we follow her to the administration building. I mean, they were dealing with this as a serious problem, not as just somebody who made a mistake and brought a laptop in.
You think maybe our people told their people to...
I have no idea. I mean, I could speculate till the cows come home.
Sure, me too. That's what I'm doing.
And I wish we had more time, because it gets really interesting. I'll try to rush here. So we get to the administration building, which is a long walk, and I'm walking slow, because one thing I know from our inbound measurements, the field is amplified not just around the pyramid, it's the whole damn complex. By being able to light this thing up and begin to take readings, I am getting readings on Chichen Itza even as we're walking, even as we're delaying, even as I'm dragging my feet, even as I'm pretending to be this old crotchety tourist who doesn't move very fast.
Richard, let me throw this in real quick. Now, before this occasion, when had you been there before and made readings?
We'd never been to Chichen Itza.
Oh, gotcha.
No, we've been to Teotihuacan, been to Tikal, you know, but this was a brand new site. It's the heart of Maya country. It's
okay.
Kind of like the grand metropolis of the Maya.
Now, should it just be obvious why you thought this particular date, this particular place would be the time and the place to make these measurements?
Well, for one thing, in July, and this is actually on the EnterpriseMission.com website, there is a picture taken by, I think it was a Honduran tourist, on July 24th of 2009, and I now know it was taken from the ball court, which if people study the maps available on Google, the overheads, they'll know what the geometry of the ball court to the Kukulcan pyramid is. And it's in the afternoon on the 24th. He's got his two little daughters with him, and there's a photograph with this building thunderstorm behind the pyramid that he snaps with his iPhone. And then a few seconds later, he gets his daughters out in front of this wall, and he takes a picture of them, and you can see them saying, "Daddy, Daddy, it's raining." I mean, you can actually see them not being very happy in this picture, while behind them, from the top of the Kukulcan Pyramid, is this incredible, colonnaded, intense, pink, semi-transparent beam.
Well, I've seen that thing, and now, is that the real deal, or is that like somebody got wild with Photoshop?
The reason I know it's real is that Jaime was the first one to investigate and give me the pictures.
Oh, gotcha.
And then Linda Moulton Howe separately investigated, and she tracked down the tourists, the family, and the fact that it was on an iPhone, and he was so excited what he saw, what he had got. He was showing all his other people on the bus when they were going back in the rain to the hotel. I mean, how does an average Honduran tourist with two little girls take a picture on a bus on an iPhone?
Mm-hmm.
So it was real. So I'm thinking of my experience in England where we measured huge torsion field energies a half a mile from the site. I'm thinking there's something buried under the Kukulcan Pyramid, and I'm going to be in a unique position at the alignment for the last 26,000 years of the galaxy and the sun and the center of the Earth to get torsion readings.
Okay.
And this was part of our anticipation and why we were so incredibly depressed the night before when they basically said, you can't come in with a laptop and do any measurements at all.
We got about 7 or 8 minutes here at the most. You got a lot of ground to cover.
We're in there measuring, and I'm getting readings. And now I'm walking slowly. The guard takes us to stand outside the administrative offices, which is right by the turnstiles where you come in, it turns out. And I'm standing outside with my laptop and the measurement stuff sitting on a trash can on the opposite side of the corridor, open air, in front of the administrative offices, which have a big sign in the window saying closed. And I'm expecting this guy who had demanded over the walkie-talkie that I personally come to the office and talk to him is going to either come out or we're going to be invited in and I'm going to have a meeting and be able to discuss various options, including throwing Jaime's name around to get the measurements that I waited 8 years to come and get, right?
Yep.
Well, they keep me waiting outside and waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing happens. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. Robin and our Mayan guides, who were with us on the bus, they go in and out several times, arguing with the security people. And a new element is introduced into this entire weird soap opera.
Yes.
They claim that the reason I'm not allowed into the complex to do the measurements is because I'm missing one crucial thing.
And what would that be?
A permit.
A permit.
It turns out that the organizers of the cruise, the same guy who won't let me speak in Los Angeles now and lay out the data we got,
yes,
did not get a permit for me to do the measurements. He charged all these people, 50 people, money to do something that he didn't get permission to do.
Is this an oversight or does it appear deliberate? There's an indiscreet question for you.
I have no idea. I just know the bottom line is the way that Robert can make this right is to set me up in L.A. so I can present the data these people paid for, give them a discount, everybody who's in the L.A. area, give them a nice discount, give them a free DVD, because we tape all these things, to all the people around the various other parts of the country who flew in to do this, to be part of what I was trying to do. We send them a free DVD, which lays out the data, because the data is extraordinary. The data is so confirmatory of this secret suppressed physics, up to and including its interaction with HARP.
Take us there.
For the last year or so, sitting here in Albuquerque at the base of the Sandias, as apart from the readings I was getting on the Accutron data set going back to 2004, suddenly something very weird showed up. And I've been asking programmers and computer experts and everybody I could think of, what can this mean? And nobody knows. You'll be getting background torsion readings of the natural feel of the Earth interacting with Venus and the Sun and the Moon and the galaxy and all that. And then suddenly, they'll come on this series of incredible straight vertical excursions, both in lower frequencies and higher frequencies, down to the teens and up to almost 1,000 cycles per second above the little Accutron's tuning fork of 360, that go on for hours and hours and hours. And I wondered, was it some local interference here in Albuquerque? Because we have a lot of military.
Oh, yes.
You got a lot of RF, you know, and I've done certain things to try to screen the detector from EM, you know, interference, but you're never 100% sure.
No, there's a lot of tech out there, that's for sure.
I'm in a ship in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, waiting for dawn the night after we are at Chichen Itza. And I'm looking at the readings because the model is that if the ancient pyramid sacred site system was built as a way of preventing the catastrophe of 2012 that a lot of people were concerned about, kind of like a stabilizing grid, a torsion stabilizing grid anchored on the pyramids at Giza, at dawn on the 21st, there should be in this model a wonderful pulse of torsion amplification from Giza rippling out across the rest of the planet, which even sitting on a ship in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, I calculated would be strong enough to be measured by my equipment. So we come up to just a few minutes before dawn at Giza, and suddenly the same comb filter looking stuff that I've been measuring for years at other places, and including here in Albuquerque, suddenly shows up. It's HARP. It's HARP radio beams probing and exciting the ionosphere, which in turn generates intense torsion frequencies, totally swamping the natural background radiation. Now, here's the crucial part that everybody needs to focus on.
Take a minute, because that's all we got.
If the HARP technology that was doing this had a nefarious intent, in other words, it was designed to destroy us,
right,
the frequencies would all be random, like fingers scraping over a blackboard.
Okay.
Imagine all those people shuddering right now.
Me too.
As opposed to a Gregorian chant. The frequency spread, and it's doing it right now. I'm watching the Accutron right now, my torsion sensing system, running real time here in Albuquerque tonight. They're pulsing the ionosphere in incredibly harmonic waves to balance out the frequencies in the torsion field of the planet and keep us spinning upright. And they've been building to this for years, and they did it just as dawn crested over Giza, so that that site would then rebroadcast a harmonic torsion field to all the other sacred monuments, including Chichen Itza, Tikal, etc., etc.
That's amazing, Richard. You know what? I got a feeling Captain George is going to finish this up with you, and I wish it was going to be me, but he might get to you before I do. We've got to get out of here because we're about to hit the hard break. But look, let's stay in touch. I'm going to give you a call next week, and let's see if we can set up something a little bit. Well, I want to hear more, okay? Richard C. Hoagland, thank you very much. Hate to bail, but we have to. Next, Ann Blake Tracy, do stand by.